Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host,
Montar.
Countdown time. And 3, 2, 1. Just about I've been waiting for the last fortnight. And yes, I said fortnight.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 280. This is Montar. I'm back. It's been quite a while. Today we have Makalua.
Whose laptop needs to learn how to run Skype faster, or Skype needs to stop being a buggy piece of crap.
Dan Quick.
If April showers bring May flowers, what do May flowers bring?
Allergies. Lots of allergies.
Ah. Well, that's true. The Mian Team.
The strategies I provide will last you 2 straight fortnights. Aw, yeah.
Oh, no, not the forts.
Forts
and
are great.
And Mad Jen.
Morning.
Still need coffee.
Yeah, I've got a nice cup right here.
Welcome back to Montar. It's only been 4 years and 111 episodes.
There's a lot of things. People said a lot of nice things about you, episode 279.
Huh, then we should skip it.
Well, I assumed Dan something specific in mind. He wanted to go, hey, look at what people said.
Well, first off, to start with Casper GM, he wanted to clarify his comment about the ocean tiles. There was a comment about differentiating between ocean tiles and shallow water tiles, and I was like, what is this distinction? What is the concern about settling on the coast? And he said, I was not discriminating between those two types of tiles. What I meant was, if you build a coastal city, you'll often have a lot of ocean and shallow water tiles that will generally just do nothing. And so I said, ah, okay. I appreciated the clarification. Timothy 001 elsewise had said he had missed the live recordings and had to settle for listening to the edited version. I usually try to catch the live version as there's much more content, which I do understand the need to edit it down. Still unhappy about the canceled live version a few casts ago. So he's referring to episode 277, and I've said it's a technical issue that has not only been addressed, but should also not resurface. And for the first time, and my in the regular panelists don't know what the technical issue is, so I will reveal it here on the live version, but it will be cut in the post-produced version. No, I probably won't be that mean. I upgraded the software. The newer version of the software didn't work. Downgraded?
Oh, of course.
Software works. Yeah. So, I know, I didn't quite keep it simple enough when I was diagnosing the problem for about 30 minutes. When we should have been live streaming. But anyway, the other thing that came up in the episode, and Madjin jumped in on this part of the conversation before I did, as a matter of fact, where Legalized Freedom was saying really enjoyed the strategic content, but I would prefer if more time was given to get even further into the details and possible strategies, likely over multiple episodes. And my response to that was, it is requests like this that stand to increase the likelihood that we return to such a topic. So the last episode we were talking about Civilization VI buildings, Civilization VI unit promotions, and I also said it would influence the timeline in which we did so. Because when I'm looking to choose topics, and it's typically me, like 98.5% of the time, and yes, 70% of statistics are made up, I'm looking at it in terms of what is the civilization community talking about, such as Civilization Fanatic Center. And when I don't see any topics that are apparent, or I'm looking at the topics and it's, no, we've talked about that recently, still for Civilization VI, since the latest patch, or not since the latest patch, but the latest patch wouldn't have changed anything in that respect. So when that happens, I start to look to generalize the strategic elements from Civ Game X can be discussed and how. And we will certainly be returning to the elements that we discussed on the last episode on a future episode, and we have a fair bit of strategic content to talk about on this episode, only it's not buildings specifically, or units specifically, except for some people's specific buildings and units, perhaps. As always, we appreciate episode feedback, including criticism when it's constructive. I mean, if it's not constructive, we're just not going to engage with it because it's not worth our time, the audience's time, or quite frankly, even the time the person who ranting and raving about is spending on it. Recorded for episode 275 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, and Alpha Shard.
So we have email from Slow. Another big picture question. We saw a terrible SimCity, which allowed a smaller company to make City Skylines, which is fantastic. I'll have to take his word on that for both games. We saw Firaxis make a space game, Beyond Earth, which was terrible, lol, and allowed Paradox to make Stellaris, which by all accounts seems to be very well done. I personally, stepping aside from reading Slow's paragraph, I have my doubts there. And he says he doesn't know. He doesn't like space games.
Yeah, so, I would suggest not so much.
Knowing who's working on it, and not to bring too much of a personal issue on it, but I find that very doubtful, as proven liars usually aren't that good at this. Anyway, do you think the commercial success of Civ 6, the overall fan reaction to the AI in Civ 6, will allow someone to make and challenge a new title like Civ 6, like Paradox, for example? Well, I don't know that Paradox could do it. Firaxis has attempted to borrow things from titles like CVs and not implement them well, but I don't expect any better job to be done if they attempted the reverse. I would like to see competition, though. Can it happen? I think it's not impossible, but somebody who knows what they're doing has to be the one to do it.
Okay, but to get the comparables better, Beyond Earth and Endless Legend were similar. They are quote-unquote space-type games, fantasy-slash-space-type games on the planet. Stellaris is not the same as Beyond Earth.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, I didn't even
not even close. Stellaris is closer to Galactic Civilizations or Mu or Endless Space or any of those actual Space 4X games. That's what Stellaris is actually going after. So Beyond Earth being terrible did allow Endless Legend to get a boost because many people went to Endless Legend instead. So there was that. I don't think overall fan reaction to the AI in Civ 6 will allow someone to just make a big challenge, a new title like Civ 6, because if you're specifically talking about the AI, then no, you're not going to have somebody come along and go, "He made better AI than they did."
I mean, well, you can't really market yourself as the same thing, but you would need another historical turn-based strategy. And they would need to have the design allow the AI to be competitive. They would definitely want to beat Civ 6 with controls and turn time, because that would bring a lot of people. But that might not bring everybody. It would just bring a decent chunk of us. And better balance/tuning. The biggest problem in my mind, aside from the UI thing, which is a low-hanging fruit, in Civ 6 is that there just aren't that many interesting choices when compared against the number of things the game makes you do. So if a game can bring that back, if you can have more interesting choices per time playing the game, then yes, a turn-based strategy, if a historical theme, can beat Civ 6. I can easily see that happening because there's a lot of time you spend in Civ 6 where you're not making choices that matter.
Yeah, there's lots of time in minigames. I mean, that's a pretty high bar to throw at.
Oh, absolutely.
Civ 6 and Civ 6 alone.
But, I'm saying, how do you beat something like Civ 6? I mean, Civ 6 is part of a firmly established franchise that is well-loved. If you want to actually compete and win, you need that high bar to steal
people. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Paradox sort of semi-competes with Praxis in the historical side, but they go to very specific sections of time, and it's probably easier for them to do that, because then they can put more depth into it, or at least historical depth.
But it's not like a McDonald's versus Burger King compete. There's definite overlap. They can definitely be a substitute for one another if one of the product qualities drops sufficiently. But it is a very different game. It's got much more real-time elements, and like you said, it's much more focused on a single period where you emphasize the strategy is very different. It's a lot more diplomacy-centric than any of the Civ games have ever been.
Yeah. And to be fair, Paradox isn't the only other strategy game place out there.
Not at all.
There's plenty. Stardock being one of them. Kind of almost sounds like this is a Paradox fan trying to throw shade at Firaxis, but
yeah, it kind of does.
I'm well acquainted with both, and I think they both need to improve, personally.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect Paradox to be the shining person in this discussion.
Oh, God, no.
Especially given their financial model and everything else. Like, how expensive is EU4 to play?
Yeah.
You mean to play with, like, a decent experience.
Yeah.
Because you can buy the base game with no DLC pretty cheap on the sale, but...
Good luck getting all the DLC.
Next, and put it all in the DLC.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean,
they are much more flagrant with
patching problems and selling DLC that makes it easier than even before if you buy the DLC, but otherwise you're hosed. At least for EU4, that's happened numerous times. I cannot vouch as strongly for the other Paradox game because I haven't played much.
I know Stellaris still has mid to late game problems, as in it gets really, really freaking boring mid to late game. It still has the problem of you build exactly one fleet for an entire universe spanning empire, because to do otherwise would get you wiped out because everybody else just built a fleet. And yeah, there's other silliness. I haven't actually played it in a while, but they're apparently slowly working on mid to late game stuff now.
Well, the Paradox games have the benefit of design when it comes to AI threat quality, similar to how Civ 4 did. Like, the Civ 4 AI was god-awful with tactics, but because of the design, it was masked a little bit.
Yeah.
And Civ 6 just doesn't have that benefit, so it's really glaring.
Yeah. I mean, granted, Moo came out, and it was like, ooh, we're going to remake Moo! And kind of went, what? What? Go, yeah, go away. That was boring. It didn't live up to its own hype. I seriously doubt anybody's going to try and make a game that's exactly like Civ, the whole across the mass time versus individual chunky sections.
Yeah, it's higher risk that you don't need to take because you can make a historical themed game that's less direct competition, so you can still attract people.
Well, yep. Yeah, that's the thing. I have never played EU. Never any of those titles. But of course, I know people on this panel have, and I know other people have as well. And I see games like that, and I think about what choices Civilization did not make. How they chose to abstract something, how they chose to dilate time or not dilate time, and then another title comes in and tries to say, hey, you wish you could do this in Civ? You can do this in this game. So it's not so much, as you were saying, as been getting at direct competition, but at the same time, just because there was a terrible SimCity or a terrible Civ title, maybe it's just the word choice, and I'm just being super picky about the word choice. It doesn't allow another company to make it. If it's terrible, it can help shine the light on an alternative that's comparable being developed and released at the same time. But I think the opposite can also be said. Man, this game was really good. I'd like to play another game that's like this, but perhaps looks at it from a different aspect. Hey, if you like Civ, you may like EU4. Or hey, if you liked Beyond Earth, you also like this title. So I think it could be either or, quite frankly.
You can get a niche vacuum, though, like if a series sufficiently falls off a cliff. I'm not sure SimCity is there or not because I haven't played it in so long, but it sounds to me like that kind of happened.
it's not fully off the cliff, but yeah.
Like if you go like 10 plus years where every release from this company trying to make this game is not just bad, but like really bad, like people will just choose not to play the game even if there's no alternative to it in that niche. Then, yeah, that's when you can actually see someone get replaced.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's going on with Endless Legend versus Beyond Earth. Endless Legend, I think, still has people playing it.
Yeah, well, it's not like there's a lot of strong history prior to Beyond Earth's release over the past decade plus either.
Well, I mean, they had the benefit of Firaxis meme to go with it, so there's that. And there was literally nothing before.
The people who made Centauri were completely gone.
Yeah, but it was still, it's a Firaxis game.
So
expectations were higher, whereas Endless Legend basically did not have that. It was totally new.
Yeah.
Twice as many people right now playing Endless Legend than there are playing Beyond Earth. There you go.
And certainly part of that is the product, but then also the what do I expect from this title, given who is involved in its development and what they have done before, and also what they have promised to realize. Because, man, it's like, you know, hey, we fixed this. We know you guys were really ticked off about this. Yeah, I was, but in the time that you were fixing things that I was ticked off about, I found this other
title. Yeah, left.
So what you're saying now is you can now deliver to me what you said you could deliver 6 months ago, a year ago. Well, I'm playing this game that delivered on what they promised today. Better luck next time. I've only got so much time in the day. And even if I had more time in the day, I still wouldn't come back to you for this one. Ta-ta! You know, you've lost a customer, at least in the shorter term. That's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you do that enough times in a row, it will cost you, yes.
Less is more.
Okay.
This is our grand plan for the game. Right now, we're concerned about making this experience best it possibly can be. This is what you can expect. Ah, okay. And if it's one thing, it's, man, I thought I was going to enjoy this, but it's not. It's crap for me, not that it's crap full stop.
Yeah, that's why people have more patience with, like, the early access games and stuff. We know they're working on it. They didn't promise the entire thing at once.
We're hoping they're working on it.
Oh, yes. Depending on which game we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still plenty of people who, like, I bought this game, why doesn't it fully work right now? It's early access. So what?
Yeah,
shut up, go away.
Although, to be fair, some companies are starting to make it look like they're treating their actual supposed finished release products as early access.
Yeah, there was too many people who slipped in at the end of their development cycle and just called it early access and then stayed that way and didn't quite technically leave beta, even though it's like 5-6 years later.
Yeah.
There is that. And then they can claim, oh, but we never said it was finished. But yes.
Depends on the game, too. Like, Minecraft's handling of that and RimWorld's current handling of that is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not everyone does it that way.
Minecraft is done. It's just that they just add more...
Well, no, I'm thinking about how they progress through alpha and beta. Because you could buy Minecraft while it was in alpha, and it wasn't nearly the depth that you have available to it now, it was still pretty solid on its own merits.
And it was enough that people could start figuring out mods for it, which brought in more people, so...
Yeah.
Well, it's a style of development thing. If you have the base of the game, and then you just add a piece at a time as you go and make sure each of those pieces work with the rest of the game, then yes, you can do that style, and that works. I mean, even Don't Starve has that. They did that way. And a number of other games have gone that route, where you put out a base and then you slowly add a piece at a time. And that's a better way of developing it if you're going for that style. But bigger games, AAA games, quote-unquote, or games that aren't built like that, yeah, they tend to be a lot more messy and problematic. And, frankly, AAA games tend to have people who are old and don't like new styles of doing things.
Yeah, it just seems kind of
bad. That's why indies tend to be
better. Like, it's anti-competitive behavior. Which you would expect at least some AAA publishers to adjust.
The hell
they
no.
They don't get ousted.
No, they're happy as long as they're still raking in the billions.
That's true. But I feel like the positions of somebody like the COD people, the Call of Duty people, is different from something like Firaxis in terms of what you can get away with long term. Just from a sheer numbers perspective. And
well, okay, Activision versus 2K, yes, Activision's way better. Not better, but bigger.
Yeah.
They're also better
That's what I'll go
grinding
with.
Out. They're better at grinding down an IP till it's no longer worthwhile.
Yeah, better at marketing, too.
Well, they just throw more money at it. That's not better. That's just more money.
I don't know. I would say they're better at it because they hawk an inferior product to get more people to purchase it. That to me sounds like good marketing. More so than a good game.
It's more brand recognition.
Yeah.
So marketing-ish.
And they have the genre advantage somewhat. Yeah.
I don't know. It'll take a point where, like, an indie grows up and becomes a big developer and slaughters a publisher before the big publishers stop and go, okay, maybe we should change how we're doing stuff.
The only other thing I could picture happening is that one of the publishers makes that adaptation and starts running away.
Yeah.
Like, they get double or triple money, and the other ones start looking at that.
It depends. The bigger ones tend to be public companies, so they can't really do
that's true.
They used to do. Because then the investors are like, okay, so how do we make money? Or what makes you money? Therefore, push that, push that, push that, push that. They're like, but that doesn't sell us games, actually. Because you're using the wrong metrics, you dumbasses. Yada, yada, yada.
Thank you, Slo, for your latest email into the show. America! In Civilization VI. This is the first in what I'm calling the As and Against series in Senate. It is following the structure of how do you play as this civilization and how do you play against this civilization, generalizing. We're going to start by looking at all of these civilizations that were included in Civilization VI Vanilla upon release. So we're going to look at the downloadable content civilizations as well as the pre-order bonus civilization known as the Aztecs after that fact. We are referencing the Civilization Wikia again. The American people represent a civilization, Civilization VI, did you know? Led by Teddy Roosevelt, their unique unit is the P-51 Mustang. They also possess a unique building, the film studio, and the unique ability Founding Fathers shortens the time needed to gain government legacy bonuses. As described, and there's a strategy section and there's a victory section for America on the Civilization Wiki, so let's talk about the strategy first, which will eventually lead over, of course, into a victory condition. Quote, America is possibly more than any other civilization equipped towards the late game. With the exception of the bonus to combat strength, all of the bonuses kick in later than most other civilizations. This gives Teddy a chance to catch up if he's lagging behind the other civilizations, unlike many others. If you enter the later eras already leading, you will most likely run away from all of your competition, unquote.
So like most civs in that regard.
Yeah, not really specific to America there. A victory. America is by far most suited to a cultural victory. By sticking with classical republic throughout the early ages, they build up a substantial bonus to great person generation through the rest of the game and use their national parks and film studios to overrun all other civilizations with their massive tourism output. They could also go for a domination victory by sticking with an oligarchy throughout the early ages and use their combat strength bonus early in strong, experienced armies later. While there's nothing preventing them from seeking out a science or religious victory, they don't have any particular abilities that help them out in that regard either, quote unquote, and I do approve of not mentioning the score victory whatsoever.
Dan's favorite, though.
Yes, because score is so important in Civ still. That's why I keep talking about it on and on and on. I will admit up front that I haven't played a lot as America! And yes, I really have to keep pronouncing it that way. That's less to do with America itself as compared to what I prefer in other civilizations, but I'm not disagreeing with either the strategy or the victory with regards to America as described here on the Civ 6 Wiki.
I've played them a few times, and I just win domination with them, but that's true for the Civs I play in general, so.
Well, I was about to say, are you capitalizing on the American later era unique units in order to be able to do that, or is that just kind of incidental?
Nope, their later era units are pretty crummy. Their plus strength bonus in the early goings is helpful.
Yeah, play America on a Pangea map. Everywhere's your home continent.
Well, that's not true, because they get these weird divides. But
you get a massive amount of territory that is, so.
Very frequently, there's at least some city-states or an AI that is on your continent. Barring some rare-ish exceptions where you just get unlucky with the continent divides. But for the most part, there are one or multiple targets you can take advantage of that ability and get out to an early lead.
Yeah, even if the target is only the barbarians initially early on, you can get that initial policy, which gives you a combat strength against barbarians. Then you've got that, and then it stacks with this plus +5. So barbarians should not be an issue for you as America.
And neither should the barbarian cities. So, like, when you need to expand and you just build a couple slingers, upgrade them into archers, and take out the barbarian cities, that can help you out. And by that, I mean, of course, the ones you have to declare on that aren't proper civilizations.
Barbarian city-states?
Yes. Yes, that's what they call themselves.
Specifically here in America, when we're looking at their unique units, because we've kind of alluded to them, at Rifling, you get yourself the Rough Rider. It's a heavy cavalry unit. You earn culture from kills on the capital's home continent, which, of course, ties into the game's ability. You gain plus 10 combat strength when fighting on hills and requires no resources. So once again, these horses came out of thin air. Gain plus 10 combat strength when fighting on hills. It's very situational. Certainly, if you have some hilly terrain, then perhaps you would want to consider either you're fighting in or you're trying to defend that particular territory. Also, depending upon the opponents that you are fighting, that could be advantageous. So instead of a melee strength of 67, you're now at 77, notwithstanding any possible other, say, policy applications that are improving the strength of said units. And it does upgrade to a modern armor.
The problem is that, yeah, you have to wait until modern armor for that.
Plus, there is that one city-state that if you're the suzerain of also adds another bonus to heals for your horse units.
Oh, yes.
So you can really kick that up.
We also know that America gets a plus +1 appeal to all tiles in a city with a national park.
Ooh.
Film studio is a straight upgrade from the broadcast center. It increases tourism pressure of the owning civilization by 100%. So, yeah, not just the city that it's constructed in. Wow. So also, besides that, giving you plus +4 culture, getting a great artist point, musician, another great work of music slot. Yeah, that's all just tying into the cultural victory through tourism, where, of course, tourism is, I enjoy saying this, your offensive culture. As opposed to. I know. Now, it's not just America that has offensive culture, just to be clear.
Okay, just check.
It's just a special brand because it's through the film studio as opposed to the broadcast center. Playing as America, because there's also defending against America, which is to be where the leader agenda comes into play. Because, I mean, if you're playing America, you don't have to follow their leader agenda.
No, but if Teddy's your neighbor, don't go beating up on those barbarian city-states.
I don't know. I like to piss him off.
It is amazing.
He likes peaceful civilizations that have a city on his home continent and hates civilizations starting wars against a city-state or civilization based on his continent, especially if it's one of his own cities, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, nobody really likes that.
We do have Arabia in Civ 6, led by Saladin. Everybody should know this by now. So they get the last profit, which guarantees they always get a profit last, which is neither a good thing nor a bad thing.
Well, it's the one time you should consistently make use of religion, I would argue.
If you wait for it to be last, then pretty much all the good stuff's gone, and you're just cleaning up
maybe
a little bit.
In single player, the good stuff may or may not be gone.
Oh, no, the good stuff's already gone in single player.
Whatever you say.
You get the last one. In single player, the AIs follow a very specific path through the religions. They always take the Wonder Faith on the first religion. They always take Jesuit education on the third religion. They always take reliquaries on the fourth religion. Yada, yada, yada. Okay. It is a very rote script. So if you want any of those, you have to get it not last. And it's really bad because it's always that way. And then, of course, the first person to go forth and start evangelizing more beliefs will always end up with Defender of the Faith and yada, yada, yada. The other AIs will just not bother doing religion anymore, evangelizing anyways. If you're playing multiplayer, then you never know what's going to happen. But even still.
Although you would, if you're playing opponents worth your time, they're probably not going to one rush religion and then pick something awful.
Cool, you would hope. Awful for their situation, really.
Well, yeah.
And that's more the problem with the AI. They don't specifically pick things that work their situation. Like, if an AI is not going for relic spam, then why are they picking reliquaries ever? If you're not going for wonder spam, are you picking faith from wonders always?
I mean, there's always the, well, to deny it to somebody else, but you really should be going after what's going to benefit you.
Yeah, something you do early game before you know, like, who your most meaningful opposition is.
Yeah. I'm going to pick the worst possible religion for me so that you can't take it for you.
The only time you can do that is some meta situation, like Dan just mentioned, that, hey, this would be really useful. And then you realize you confound it.
Yeah. No. It's just dumb. The last religion always comes down to two choices, so you at least have two crap choices to make. So if you feel like waiting to make your religion, you can. Otherwise, you can just go get a religion and totally ignore your ability, which is usually better.
Sadly.
As well, you get your Mamluks, which are a knight replacement. Pretty good. Heal. And their unique building is the Madrasa, which is a university replacement, but it comes at theology. So, yay, get your religion, get your faith, zip through all the eurekas on the religion side, and boost your science at the same time. You don't have to worry about going to education. Much faster you get theology. Otherwise, and then, of course, the Arabian worship building choice costs way less faith to build, about 10%, and gives a boost to science, faith, culture, and if other people have their worship building, they get one science per city.
Whoop-de-doo. Yeah, which may be another reason why to not actually use the other part of your ability to wait for the last prophet, but the plus one science reach foreign city following Arabia's religion, probably not waiting until you can get the next to last prophet, which is the part that makes me really cringe about Arabia. It's like, I really want to bypass this part of the ability if I really want to be using this ability, which is to found a religion. Even if, oh my gosh, everything that I want has not been taken. It's, you've got that much less time to actually make use of it.
Yeah.
But you also don't have to, like, invest at all in order to get it. So you're getting something that's inferior, but you're giving up nothing.
kind of giving
Well, you have an opportunity cost of rushing out a different religion, but that's relatively low in the scheme of things.
I'm talking all the Eurekas for the religious side. You're delaying all that to the rush up to monarchy all the way through if you don't get your religion started. Because you still have to spread it.
I think this is like a rush sieve or a sieve that you play not religious initially and just get some benefit from that as well.
In theory, if you want, you start with Arabia, you spam out some cities, spam up some campuses, so you get your science rolling, put out a couple holy sites, at least one before you get your prophet, pop that, spread it a little bit, and then hit theology because you founded a religion and instantly build madrasas in all those campuses you made, and then prophet. Also, you can just go speed up to Mamluks while totally ignoring religion. And then eventually just get it and go for the conquest religion stuff. That works too.
That looks pretty good too. You have no real delay on getting them once you're there. Grab a battering ram or a siege tower or whatever you need and just go to town.
Zoom, 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 zoom.
When it comes to playing against Arabia, my concern is not, oh no, look at their impressive religion. Or even necessarily the, oh no, they've got Mamluks. It's, oh no, all the science that they've managed to accumulate, and they're pushing through the tech tree. Now they're ahead of me, and they're looking at me funny. They're near me, and that's not good. I don't want them to be able to capitalize on pushing through on this science. That's their threat to me if they're on the map.
Yeah. Arabia that makes it fast to theocracy becomes a problem. Convert all that massive faith that they have, because their worship buildings aren't costing them much in the way of faith, into units. And, well, if they can get the theocracy quick, then the religious game is also a pain in the arse, because it'll be crap spam everywhere.
So, yes, to that point, either, oh, they're the same era I am, but, oh, they just have a crap ton more units than I do. Because all that faith bind they just did. Now, well, crap. But in terms of their leader agenda...
Take their religion.
Yeah, just like civilizations following other religions, or civilizations waging war on followers of his religion.
Yeah, basically. Just let him give you... his religion, build the worship buildings in the cities, and ignore everything else.
Arabia's your next-door neighbor. Just don't do your own religion, and just open your arms to the massive tide of missionaries that are going to come your way.
One way or another.
One way or another.
Take them out before they get their prophet.
Yeah, by the way, there's some technical silliness with the prophet. If you wipe out Arabia before they get their prophet, there'll be one less religion in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because it is guaranteed that they get a religion.
That.
Also, there is a very, very, very specific point where you could end up with one extra religion in a game because Arabia's in there. Because they always get the second to last one. Except that there is potential, depending on order, for you to get one and an AI to get one. And Arabia to get one all on the same turn.
I did not know about that one.
Yeah, it is a very, very, very specific edge case, but I've actually done that.
If you're still looking for a religion, and the timing would be such that they would end up getting the last religion. Oh, you mean you want me to leave them alone? No, just leave them with one little crap city, surrounded by a whole bunch of units if you're that concerned. Get your religion and then kill them.
This is the AI that you want to punch in the face.
Yeah, and it's not an especially strong civ either.
No, it's just the constant pop up of talking
AI
to you.
What? You want to get great people? What?
Yeah.
What?
Shut up, Pedro.
Yeah, look at all the wondrous things the people in my civilization are doing. Great, I'll just take those, thanks.
These guys get adjacency bonuses for rainforests, so I guess you can take advantage of that. They're kind of built for getting great people and culture, but you should never go for culture, so that's kind of lost. But it's there. It's there, technically. They have a good boat later on, but you should probably kill everybody earlier. Unless it's a PvP game and you declare on Dan.
We have mentioned before on the show that if there's a unique district for a civilization, say in this case, the Carnival, then you may want to actually construct that sooner, or in some cases, I'm actually going to construct this because it will in fact be of benefit to me, and this is one of those instances.
It's no longer ignoring the district limit, which is kind of unfortunate. Mm-hmm. this one isn't like getting a free commercial district or a free harbor or a free industrial zone or whatever in terms of pop growth. It's not nearly as strong, so it's a lot more situational as a bonus.
I don't know. It's a pretty strong bonus.
Well, it matters later. I consider it weak. You should never go for culture. No.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the street carnival.
Yeah, which replaces the entertainment district.
Yeah, but you don't need happiness. You just keep your city smallish and go smash everything. It's fine.
But if you build up your carnivals, then you can stay at war longer, especially in multiplayer games.
That's true.
Dodge the mass stacking of war weariness with having three times the amenity of everybody else.
There you go.
And then you can basically survive to the point where they start getting rebels, and you just out-amenity them.
Unless they're Gandhi, in which case they're giving you some extra WW. Yeah.
Well, then you're a good balance versus Gandhi.
Yeah. It really is a match if you got served.
I mean, the fact that the rainforest styles are going to provide, yeah, the plus one adjacency bonus for a campus, commercial hub, holy site, and theater square district. I mean, campus and commercial hub.
That's lots.
That's great, because it's like, what else are you going to do otherwise with that rainforest tile? It's like, oh, well, I could chop it. Yeah, but besides getting rid of that adjacency bonus, you're probably likely going to reveal a bunch of planes. And why waste that builder time on chopping the rainforest tile, as Brazil in particular, when you're going to lose that adjacency bonus, and do something else with it? Or just not construct a builder in that case, rather than going chopping rainforest tiles. Construct something else. Buy something else. And up front, we already mentioned about, you know, the leader agenda. Likes civilizations who are not competing for great people and will recruit great people whenever possible. Dislikes losing a great person to another civilization. Well, who doesn't, Pedro? I mean, really?
It just gets them to declare war on you so that you can just wipe out him.
Yeah.
His cities for free.
Well, in case you aren't already going to do it, here's your reason to cap this fool. Yeah. Okay.
You got a great person before me. I hate you. I'm going to declare war on you. Well, you know, the reason I got great people before you is because I'm ahead of you, and I can switch you. Oh, look, that's why you declared war. Goodbye.
And because I'm actually trying to get great people, and you're just over there doing whatever.
Yep.
You'd rather win the game, thank you very much.
It's true, after recruiting or patronizing a great person, 20% of its great person point cost is refunded.
Yay! That's good.
That's very good.
To a point, that's good. I mean, it depends. If you're in a competitive race for one, then sure, that's really good. If you're already blasting past everybody because you've got, like, plus 30 to that great person type and no one else has anything even close, then eh.
Well, you may decide, well, I guess I don't need to worry about running this wildcard policy that's going to give me plus 2 for, you know, like a great scientist or a great merchant or something like that. I could free that up for something else, essentially full stop in the game, which for other civilizations is always nice to have to try to give you that competitive edge. But it's like, look, I already beat you to one, and now I've got a jump start on beating you to the next one. Because I'm me. Which is another reason to stomp their face.
That too.
Did we mention that rainforest tiles get plus one housing for neighborhoods built adjacent to them?
No, we didn't, but
nope.
It's there.
It's there.
So, yes, unlike everybody else, your neighborhoods won't need you to burn down all the rainforests to get proper appeal rating.
Exactly.
Although, amusingly, keep this in mind, rainforest tiles provide plus one housing for neighborhoods. It does not mean that the appeal of that neighborhood is going to be higher.
Although you do get more appeal from rainforest from their bonus.
Pay attention to your appeal lens. There's also the unique unit.
It's a battle me ship.
It's pretty hard, and you should use it in late game wars against Dan specifically. It
also shows up on the culture side.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're plowing a culture game, you can
which
get
which you shouldn't
to,
do because culture is terrible.
Except you can get a battleship
sure.
Well ahead of
get
other
some
people.
Compensation for it, but it's still terrible.
Hopped up at nationalism. It's stronger and better and than the battleship that it replaces. And you don't need any resources.
Yep.
You can have battleships before anybody else can have battleships.
And boy, do they like to spam them.
Yeah, you'll see a few of those, probably.
Yep, they will go out of their way to make sure that they use it.
Mostly a land-based map? Well, then...
they'll still build one in a lake.
Yes, they still will. If they can, absolutely.
Are you spying on me or something?
If you have to ask.
I would never, under normal circumstances, spy on you.
Which means Phil is always operating under abnormal circumstances because he is spying on you.
Well, I mean, it's me we're talking about here, so.
Well, I guess it's a good thing the spies seem to die real easy. Or at least that's what this topic is about. Others are saying that, no, it seems to go with the percentages, and maybe they're just getting bad streaks, but who knows with the RNG.
Yeah, I used to, like, always just say, okay, this is almost certainly confirmation bias, but then it happened once in a Paradox game where it wasn't confirmation bias. It was really happening, like, 10 times more often than it should. This is probably another case of confirmation bias, but not necessarily.
I don't know, given how many spies you can have at any particular point in the game, the time that you are taking in order to construct the spy, those two things combined, I'm more likely to use my spies for intelligence gathering because they're likely to not only succeed in that mission, but then in successive missions as well, as opposed to going for them to perform some kind of sabotage. I mean, there's very rare situations where I'd be like, I really want you to disable that spaceport. I'm going to go for it because I feel it's going to give me this advantage because you're going for a space victory and I'm trying to take you over. But most of the time, I view it as an opportunity for increased visibility at a diplomatic levels to get more intrigue, which I then translate into what I'm doing otherwise in the game. Some people talk about that they use them for counter-spies. I find that all but certainly completely unnecessary. I guess I suppose if there's the siphoning fun that's happening constantly again and again and again, well then maybe. But most of the time it's no, I want you to go into a city of a civilization that I'm not going to have visibility on otherwise, like units on the border, for example, and you're also a threat. I want to see what it is that you are constructing in that city. I want to see what's going around that city, especially if I think it's going to be my next target, just to give me that little bit of edge of information, and then I have a reasonably good idea that you are going to be able to survive throughout most of the game. Is it underwhelming? Yes. Some people have said it's better in Civ 5, it's better in Civilization 6 than it was in Civilization 5 when it comes to spies. Well, I certainly don't see the, hey, it's only going to take 1,500 turns in order to complete this operation. You know, I'll give you that, but kind of weird because I'm not as frustrated as I am with espionage system in Civilization 5, but that could just simply be because I've so many more hours logged in Civilization 5 because it's been around longer. And the espionage system in Civilization 6 is not necessarily finished yet, but as it stands right now,
one point brought up in the thread that could be why people keep seeing their spies die over and over is maybe there's a counter spy where they were sending it that's getting leveled up as it kills theirs, making it harder for their spy to be successful.
Yeah, sometime, although I've played games where I don't even have a spy yet and enemy spies are just dying left, right, and center in my cities for literally no reason.
They're tossing you a lot, then odds are you're going to get some of them.
Yeah. But one of the other things I think people don't do, which is probably where it is if you don't do the get sources, you're basically cutting your chance of success way down. You definitely want to get your sources first in the city before trying to do something. Otherwise, yeah, you're probably going to fail the mission.
Even with get sources, maybe they're doing one of the harder missions first instead of one of the easier missions first.
Yeah, that's true. And if you're going for, like, I'm going to go steal your artwork at, like, 35% chance, good chance it's going to die. Also, if you're going for siphon funds, because the AI likes to do that, counter-spying, they can counter-spy commercial districts.
I think a more interesting question, whether you're using your spies to surveil, to try to sabotage the success rate, the promotion level, is when you capture a spy and it's told you, hey, the spy's been killed. And I'm thinking, really? Maybe a little bit more information as opposed to why that spy is getting killed as opposed to getting captured. Maybe you want to say default if you're at war. Okay, you're just going to kill it automatically because you're not going to be able to get any gold from the Civ you're at war with unless you want to include that as part of the peace negotiations, but fine. But otherwise, give me some sort of strategic element where I can influence and then be notified of that success of my efforts, of whether I'm going to capture the spy or kill the spy. Because quite frankly, I'd rather capture it to then get a whole bunch of money from the AI, and then the hopes that they're going to send it to me again, and then I can get a whole bunch of other money.
If you're at war with somebody, it's still worth it to capture the spy, because then they can't use it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's not much downside to capturing in general.
Killing has downside, because it'll just make a new one.
If you kill them, then hopefully they're then going to spend the resources to construct another spy and then hopefully come right back to me and then I can turn around and kill it again. doesn't necessarily have to be it's automatically going to happen, but in the moment it's like, okay, fine, I'm not going to be able to do anything with the spy right now, because my idea is, okay, I captured the spy. I generally want to give it back to the AI, because I figure even if you use that spy successfully against me in the future, the amount of money that I am going to get back from you is going to more than compensate, even if you turn around and siphon funds. Which you could say, well then, that shouldn't be a thing we should be looking at balancing in terms of how much the AI is going to give for their spies returning, especially their general disposition towards you as well. But it's like, there's no way they would give me gold for anything else comparable to that. That's a whole other separate issue. Recorded for episode 266 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Drew Sane, Ruben, and ZT Zarish.
So hi everybody, welcome to this year's World Congress meeting.
That's redundant.
Let me say more than two sentences, please.
No.
There was a similar video on episode 242, you're welcome Dan.
Thank you.
Where SIF-5's World Congress proposals were kind of silly, a lot of them are not helpful to anyone, so you don't use them, or it just causes more strife. It was always weird, and they kind of
realism.
They point out a lot of good ones here.
I propose we raise funding for the arts.
Which is kind of humorous, because in the real game, everyone wants arts funding, even if it doesn't really help them, instead of science funding, which everyone should want.
Also, I think we should make Boat Mormons the world religion.
Since we got past that,
we only concern ourselves with matters of true importance. I propose we ban crabs.
Why?
I don't like them.
Always annoying, because usually most of the civs want to have luxury resources. Banning luxury resources usually doesn't help people. So, of course, in this video, multiplayer's like, well, no, we don't really want to ban crabs.
I propose we raise funding for science. That will actually benefit more than one person.
The right idea, and because of that, no one listens, because, mob rule. So,
I propose that we repeal the ban on truffles.
I thought it was candy, but it was pigs.
Not either of those things.
Really, as good a reason as any reason in Civ 5 for a Civ to ban a Lux, because there's really no reason to ban a luxury resource, usually, most of the time.
Well, see, Drew, they were just concerned about your dental hygiene and candy.
Oh, that is true.
So
candy is
looking
bad
up, for you. They were looking out for your health, I mean, really. And then the sugar intake, man.
All great suggestions, guys. And then just as a little extra thing, I propose that I be voted world leader. So where should we start?
Which nobody wants, but it doesn't matter, because we bought up all the city-states. And if you have all the city-states, then who cares? The most of the rest of the video is just everyone not being happy with Venice, but it doesn't matter because Venice is trying to win the game with World Congress and be the leader of the world because he has city-states.
I propose an embargo on all city-states.
Yeah, against. Strongly against.
I have city-states of my own, thank you very much. We all do. But he has the most, so if we make them all disappear, we'll be all on the same footing, and he'll be back where he belongs.
Inside his one city. I'm in.
I agree.
I do too, but I still hate you.
You're a monster.
That's not how it works, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, it was kind of a pretty good representation on how stupid the World Congress is.
And a reminder to us how much we will not miss it in Civilization VI.
Yep.
Recorded for episode 267, Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Majin, Martin Alvito, and Stormtrooper 412. A certain video that ties other videos together.
So we have this fairly silly video from White Lightning HQ that's entitled Civ 5 The Great War, and it basically spoofs the Hitler Channel, I mean the History Channel documentaries, by telling the story of an 8-player multiplayer game of Civ 5 in that particular documentary style. It's actually pretty popular as these things go. I mean, they've already got 90,000 views in 5 days, so they must be doing something right. It's an interesting little video. You know, they're basically live acting leaders and things along those lines, and it's pretty silly.
In honor of this video, seeing as how it's kind of a culmination of all these Civ 5 videos, and maybe White Lightning is getting prepared to transition to Civ 6, maybe this is their sum-up of Civ 5. If so, well-timed and well-done. Seeing as how this is Polycast, and I haven't done this in a very, very long time, I went through the video and pulled out quotes and put together a top 10. You're welcome, Internet.
Don't let Dan make a top 10, oh dear.
And then just quotes from the video. Number 10. Egypt just seemed to build things. They didn't know why.
Okay, yes.
Number 9, but then I'll make another caravel or something. Ooh. Number 8, go to another planet and start over. I'm sure that sounds fun, but I'll bet it gets old pretty fast. And I'm like, is that a reference to Beyond Earth? Well done. that's what I thought instantly. Number 7, and even more people thought these names were just stupid in reference to religion names. Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you give people the ability to name things, and,
Name it. Name it crazy.
Next, deem the winner simply because they were no longer around, so why not? Your custom victory conditions. We would never have custom victory conditions in, say, cooperative multiplayer ever. No.
No,
we play every game to fruition, some victory condition or other, totally. Number 5, crabs are banned for some reason. Well. And specifically crabs. Only crabs. Number 4, that's a bummer. Guess I'll just start over. Which was Enrico's response to Gandhi nuking Venice. It wasn't uncommon at this point to see somebody shooting an arrow at a tank. Number 3. Oh, yeah, because there's no reference. And that's just not Civ 5, of course. Number 2, then Gandhi.
Oh, yeah.
It's always then Gandhi. Then number 1, in terms of quotes from this video for the Great War from White Lighting, I'll just put a city here. What could happen?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, because they wanted whales, which tied to a previous video about people wanting whales, and the only place available for whales was right on the border with the Ottoman Empire, Sweden and the Ottoman Empire. Instead of, like, the capital was called Cheeseland, and of course they called it New Cheeseland. Honorable mention to New Cheeseland.
I think I'm going to name all my cities New Cheeseland in my first play. Of
New Cheeseland, newer Cheeseland, newest Cheeseland.
Super shiny New Cheeseland. Speaking of putting bunches of hours into Civ 5, kind of ish, 7 years later, according to Scene Spy, it has reported that it has gotten to the third most sold PC exclusive game. The other two above it are World of Warcraft and Garry's Mod. Now, they do point out that this is partially due to it goes on sale on Steam all the time for like $10 or less, but eh? I mean, hey, it's not as much profit for Firaxis, but a lot of people have bought it. Not necessarily played it, as we've seen in other Steam stats, but...
Yeah.
Beyond Earth. in the article that Mackie's quoting there from Game Revolution, Jonathan Leake, quote, Firaxis Games is able to sell the game, being Civilization V, at incredibly low margins thanks to the game's single-player focus. Most modern PC games feature multiplayer at the forefront, which requires costly server investment and upkeep, unquote. Now, I read that, and I think... I guess it depends on your definition of costly. And I read multiplayer at the forefront, and I'm wondering if he's thinking more about, like, a World of Warcraft.
Yeah, he is. Because there's definitely multiplayer in the game. It's just that Steam is handling that log, so Firaxis doesn't have to.
The further comment that Civilization V debuted in September 2010 to admiration from critics, but wasn't initially liked by many series fans who viewed it as an inferior product to its predecessor. I smiled at that. However, after the release of its first expansion, Gods and Kings, along with free updates, it has been heralded as one of the greatest strategy games in history, quote-unquote. I don't think that happened after the first expansion. That happened after the second expansion, Brave New World.
The first expansion was okay, we'll give you a second chance.
Yes, but the longevity of Civilization V was not guaranteed after Gods and Kings, let alone any of the patches. No, it was Brave New World, and what that introduced, along with what it was also looking to address otherwise in the game to that point. And then the last sentence here, Civilization VI recently released with far greater initial results, delivering a more balanced experience. Yes, as compared to Civilization V on release, yes. Okay.
Well, yes.
Fine.
Yes.
That's true.
Fine, yeah. Then. That's fine.
Yes.
I'll read between the lines there.
Considering the unmitigated disaster that was Civ 5 release. Okay, I guess.
And, of course, on Steam Spy, you can then have a look at any title that is tracking on Steam. It will show you owners, players in the last 2 weeks, playtime in the last 2 weeks, and playtime total. And I know average and median, of course, is skewed, et cetera, et cetera. And Steam Spy, even amidst, quote-unquote, still in beta, so expect major bugs, unquote. And if you have a look at the playtime total between the two, the median is pretty close between Civ 5 and Civ 6. It'll be interesting to see where Civilization 6 is in 7 years.
Yeah, we got a couple expansions to go through, at least.
Yeah.
Yay, Civ 5. And yay, Civ in general.
Go, Civ, go.
Approved by Inspector Gadget.
Go Gadget Expansion.
You see, kids, there is this show.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
I mean, we've essentially been playing the beta for a few months now, so...
I was just going to say Modern Practice, it'd just be early access, full stop.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, now, come on.
A lot of games are going that route. Sysfix is weird because some of its aspects are polished as if it was a release title, and some of them really are at early access levels of quality. It's a mash of the two together. It's awkward.
Thank you for listening to the 280th episode of Polycast. I'm Dan Q, joined by returning guest co-host Monthar.
Hello.
And goodbye. It shall be momentarily. To me and Zine.
I'll sink your battleship with my unique battleship.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to end the Mackie fan. His name was the main team, apparently. Magalua.
I have a built-in fan base.
Oh, my God.
I approve. Mackie, you can be on the next episode.
Mackie's been danified.
I don't know about the rest of you people, including myself, but Mackie can return.
How does it feel to be danified?
Mackie, you're so fantastic.
And Matt Jen.
Bye, everybody.
Yeah, and guess who's just arrived? Excellent. Well,
the Mackie fan
is here. Mackie's not here, but the Mackie fan has arrived. Excellent.
Yeah, I love how it took a full, 20 seconds after I hit join call for it to go, maybe I'll let you, maybe. And then when I come in, look, like everything you guys said before it actually caught up.
Did that go again?
Spell that for us.
Nukes.
Okay, Grim.
I still reject that this is necessarily just a Grim thing. Did you watch some of my Civ 4 videos? Are you serious? I had a comment on my channel about the way I was acting when I was nuking stuff.
It's just recently, Phil, there's been better marketing from Grim's people than your people.
That's true, that's true. Just because I stopped playing Civ 5 for an extremely long period of time outright, so, yeah, and Grim became known for it, and I'm just saying, I am a nuker in my own right, and I demand that be acknowledged, on pain of nuking the hell out of you if you disagree.
Okay, then.
Did you know that spending a night in the fort was actually 2 weeks? You go in, and then you're stuck there for 2 weeks.
No more, no less.
Mackie's being a Highlander.
There can only be one.
Yeah, there's only one, Mackie. Thank you for noticing.
On the whole internet.
Yes, on the whole internet. There are no others.
You are so dangerous in dangerous territory here, Mackie, with that reference. But I will be a gentleman and not make a reference this time.
I was thinking it, too. But I think I've already implied enough, so we're good. I'll show you offensive culture.
Something football?
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of the butts of rifles, but sure, football, yeah, we'll go with that.
I feel like the troll response to that is you mean soccer, but that's a whole other, complete other conversation. See, so I'm going for a diplomatic, air quotes, it's a diplomatic victory because I'm the only person that diplomacy myself. Domination, rather, yeah.
Diplomation.
You might consider it.
That was really a thing in Civ 4. I mean, you just took so much population, you could vote yourself in with your vassal. And you win.
Oh, Mackie. Maybe Phil, you're there.
Whoa. One second.
You really were about to get wrecked. and lose your topic.
Mackie was fine with this until I said that I'd give it to Phil, and then it was, whoa, wait a minute.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
No, that was called a bio break.
You mad?
You broke your nose?
No. You know what I mean. I'm not going into detail about that.
Record date April 29th, 2017. Civ 6 Parody Clips, copyright Door Monster. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.